Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friend's music record shop. Go visit him down at 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. They got new records coming in every Friday. This Friday, records from The Offspring, Neil Young, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Panda Bear, new One Direction record, all kinds of other stuff. So, also, they do a lot of in-stores and things on Saturdays and Sundays. This Saturday, November 14th, Turntable Takeover with Devise. So they'll be hanging out, playing all their favorite records. There'll be Four Hands Brewery sponsored, so there'll be some beer to give away. So come out November 14th for that. Also, mark the calendar for November 28th, next Rock Paper Podcast showcase with Hands and Feet and Connor Lau. Visit them online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
This is Mark Bland, the host of The Q, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast, hanging out in St. Peter's with my guest Mark Bland.
Well, thank you very much, Shane. Hey. Appreciate it, sir.
Welcome to the show.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. I'm excited to sit and talk podcasting and stuff with a fellow radio guy and maybe hopefully learn something.
I don't think you're going to learn anything from me. There's definitely no way to learn anything from me. Not to stick your foot in your mouth. Not to piss people off. I mean, you might learn that.
Right.
That's about that. That's about all I can teach anymore. So.
Yeah. But yeah. So Mark hosts a show. How often are you doing your show?
The Q is a weekly, at this point, it's because people put commercial breaks and stuff like that. It's like an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the week. But like, if you download it in the podcast form, it's just an hour long show.
So yeah, you can, find The Q, on, markbland.net.
Theqnow.com. Actually, you can go to theqnow.com. That's the website for the show.
Cool.
As well as iTunes and all the typical stuff.
Yeah. So why The Q? Where'd that name?
Interesting question. The Q basically was kind of a two-part thing. When I first started in radio broadcasting, I worked for a company called Q106.5. It was a radio station here in town, and I was an intern there. And I always liked the way when people would talk about the radio station, how the word Q rolled off the tongue very easily. I always thought that was kind of cool. And so, like, many years had gone by, that station had gone away, and nobody was calling anything the Q in the market at that time. And then there was the other side of that. I was like, okay, so when I started to develop the name for the show, I was like, I like the Q. The Q could be like a question, because the show that I do is kind of opinionated based, so maybe there's a question associated, which leads to the opinionation. And also, at the time, we were kind of first get like when I first started the show, it was 2007. So we're first getting into podcasting. We're first getting into, like, at least in the Midwest, it's starting to hit here. I was one of the earliest adopters of podcasting. And so, like, at that time, I don't know if you, do you know much about BitTorrent? Do you know much about illegal downloading? Do you know much about stealing shit from people? Okay. BitTorrent, you have, you know, there's a queue. Like, you put things into your queue to download. And who puts bad things into the queue? Like, when you go and download something, like when you go to download music, do you ever just go, all right, I'm going to take this good song, this Metallica song that I love, and then these two Megadeth songs that I think are shit, and then I'm going to put this good song and this good song. Like, you never put something that's bad into the queue.
All right.
So the idea of the queue is the theory that whatever's next up that we're going to talk about is something you want to hear about. Sure. It's in the queue.
Okay.
So I just spell it with the solo letter, the Q, just because it makes it easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Makes sense to me.
Work it out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, make people happy.
Yeah. So you were you kind of touched on some of your radio experience, but what got you into doing radio?
Luck.
Yeah.
Complete luck. I happened to be I was at Florissant Valley Community College. They have a radio station there called 89.5 KCFE. And at the time, though, I was going to school for law enforcement. I was going to be like a police officer or something that had to do with law enforcement. And I happened to be walking. It was my first semester ever in college. I happened to be walking down the hallway, and there was a girl named Sandy who worked for the radio station. She happened to be out in the hallway, and I was in this communications building where the station was at for a class over there. She's in the hallway, and she's standing there, and she goes, she's kind of crying. You know, she was very worried. And I come up, and I go, is everything okay? Because she was kind of upset at the time. And she goes, no, I need someone to read the news, and like things are not going well. And this is my first time around as the news producer for the station, and this, that, and the other, and I don't have anyone. And she goes, would you be interested in maybe reading the news for me? I've got to have somebody. So I told her, yeah, sure, I'll help her out. Mm-hmm. I went in. She goes, all you got to do is read the stuff off this paper. I read it off the paper. It took 5 minutes to read the news. I even did the weather and the sports, like a little weather snippet and a little sports story and stuff like that. And then, you know, she said, just end it like this, say these words. And she wrote them down for me. I ended it like that. And when it was all said and done, I was like, well, that was kind of cool. Like, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was kind of neat. I was like, if you ever need anyone to do it again, just let me know. Like, here's a way to contact me. And this is 1994, okay?
All right.
So let's be honest. There's no internet the way there's internet.
Yeah.
It's very rudimentary, CompuServe, Prodigy, AOL, right? There's no like websites the way we think of them. Like, you dialed up with a 2400 baud modem. They didn't even have, or 14.4, they didn't even have 56K yet. So we hadn't even got to that point. And I didn't even have an email address yet. Most people didn't even know email addresses existed. So at this point, it was like, here's my home phone number.
Right.
And her thing was, why don't you just come back to the station tomorrow morning? I'll introduce you to Diana, which was the head of the general manager of the station, God rest her soul. And, you know, we'll talk from there and we'll see if we can get you something set up. And that's what happened. I went in the next morning. I talked to her and Diana. And they were like, you can read the news every Tuesday and every Thursday at this time. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I just started showing up every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 o'clock to read the news. And I did the 3 o'clock and eventually the 3 and 5 every Tuesday, Thursday. Before you know it, I got hooked. I switched up my thing to radio broadcasting and mass communications as my major, and started eventually hosting the nighttime drive time show. I was basically like on air music jock, you know,
mm-hmm.
hitting the post, introducing the new song and, you know, doing the typical thing 4 to 8 p.m. every single Friday night.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always like been a fan of the format.
Sure.
And I listen to Stern Show. I graduated.
Are you a Stern guy?
Yeah.
Are you a big Stern fan?
Oh yeah, yeah. I listen to his show like so.
Do you still do?
Still listen on satellite. About 2003, I graduated school and I started working in construction for a little while. And that's when I first, when I was in school, I wasn't able to be up in the morning listening to the show.
Sure.
But when after graduation and stuff, and I started working construction, I was up in the mornings. I'd have it on my drive to work and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Stern was the reason that Stern was who I tried to emulate.
Yeah.
It's 1995. Howard's starting to make a name for himself nationally. All like, right. He had already kind of locked down Detroit, Washington, and New York at the time. And it's 1994-95, and he's starting to kind of influence towards, like, the rest of the nation. He's getting ready to, actually, he's popular enough to where he's getting ready to do private parts.
Yeah.
Like, so he's getting ready to do a movie about his career. And he had been around for many, many years, but the Midwest, us guys here in the Midwest, sure, we didn't know who he was. There was Bob and Tom in the Midwest. We had Stephen D.C. in the St. Louis market, and you had Mankow in Chicago. Other than that, you really didn't have anyone on the Midwest side that was like recognizable on the syndicated radio thing. And I started to hear flutters about this guy named Howard Stern. I started searching it up, trying to get... I had a friend of mine who moved up and went to school in Boston. And one of the stations up there had Stern on in the morning. I would have him tape it and send me copies of the cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And I would listen to it. That's how I ended up getting fined by the FCC. That's how I ended up, you know, I'm one of the few people who's actually ever been fined by the FCC because I tried to emulate Howard Stern on college radio at a time when, first off, college radio is very locked down. You shouldn't be ever attempting because it's kind of like federally funded and government funded, you know?
Yeah.
So you really don't step on the FCC's toes. I didn't care. I stepped on the toes all over the place and I got fined for it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, Howard Stern was like an influence to me, a heavy influence to me. And I've never met the man. I'd love to.
Oh, yeah. I went to the America's Got Talent taping at the Fox in St. Louis.
It was a few years ago.
Two years ago.
I remember it.
Yeah, I went there hoping to maybe...
was he in town for it? I didn't know he came in for that.
Yeah, he was... he was there for... so I was hoping, you know, stumble in and be able to run into him somehow or another through that. But, you know, obviously, I think they filmed like that part where the red carpet kind of deal, like they filmed that shot. But I think that might be like the first day or whenever they do it. I don't.
Right. When they first show up, they just wave to everybody, call it a day and move on.
But whenever they entered the Fox, they just came from their dressing room areas and come out and then they waved and they left. And that was pretty much it. So so I was in the same room as Howard, but, you know, I never got to, you know, say hi or...
So you got him and tapped him on the ass, you know, a little smack on the butt. Good job, buddy.
Yeah.
Good job. You're doing a good job.
But yeah, I've been, since 12 years, I
guess. Now, see, I've never really followed along with that. Don't get me wrong. I have satellite radio. I do have the Howard channels.
Mm-hmm.
I can listen anytime I want to. But I feel... Here's what... My theory on radio is very simple. I try not to listen to other radio show hosts too often because I don't want to be influenced by what they talk about. I don't want to hear what they say and it influence me. Or even if it's down the same road as... I might agree with, like, I had Jamie Allman on a few shows ago. I don't want there to be something that Jamie Allman says on his show that I happen to be listening to.
Yeah.
I possibly might agree with. It gets buried in the back of my mind, what he said, and then a week later, I happen to be doing my show or whatever, and I just regurgitate, just automatically, something that he said, and then before you know it, people are like, well, that's what Jamie Allman said. You're just like Jamie Allman. Like, you just... It almost feels like stealing content, but it's not stealing content. It's just like, you didn't on purposely do it. It wasn't like you wrote it down. Jamie said this, got to repeat that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. So I try to listen to Howard at weird times. Times where, like, I know I've got a few days before I'll record. And I know the stuff he's talking about. I'll try to listen to his interviews. Because then when he's doing an interview, he's not talking about anything current events or current affairs, like within the realm of things I would talk about. He's talking to, you know, Chris Pine from the Star Trek movie or somebody like that and just discussing their career and their life with them. And unless I got Chris Pine on, it's never even going to touch my lips.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I feel like that was like with songwriters and stuff. Like, I'm a huge fan of music also, and like I've always have like this kind of bucket list item to write a song of sorts and
what kind of song would you write though?
Would
it be heavy metal? Would it be rock? Would it be country?
Yeah.
Would you become a new hip hop artist?
No, I don't know about that. But I do like I like a lot of singer songwriters that kinda lend more country, you know, I guess in a sense. But Americana, I guess, you know, in a sense too. But
so could you give me an example of like a group, an artist?
There's a lot of guys I like. There, one of them, I've talked about him a lot on the show just because I'm a big fan, is Will Hogue.
I don't think I know Will Hogue.
A lot of the guys aren't like name. You know, they're not commercial. They've been writing songs. I mean, like, he wrote a song.
I met some guys called the Pernikoff Brothers.
Yeah, I know them.
Is that the style, or is it down that road?
Yeah.
A little more folksy, sure. Little, like you said, Americana, yeah. Singers. Okay.
Something like that.
I met those two guys just yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Through a TuneSpeak situation. I guess they run TuneSpeak, or they own this company called TuneSpeak, or whatever, like it was. And we just ran into each other at an event and talking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess that would be down that road.
I saw
Mumford and Sons, would that be? Would probably be more mainstream version, but sure. Yeah.
Something like that. But that's how I feel with that. Like, I always wanted, like, write a song or do something, you know. But I always feel like if I ever sit down to start writing anything, it's just others. I listen to so much music that I'm just going to – I end up getting everybody else's lyrics in my head, and I start writing stuff down. It's like – so it never ends up ever becoming
anything. Artists are really tortured souls. Yeah. Like, I say two things on my show I've brought up multiple times. Comedians are broken people. Like, if you are a relatively successful comedian, okay? And this is not a knock on comedians, ladies and gentlemen. You ask a comedian what I'm getting ready to say, they'll tell you themselves. Like, it's not Mark being a dick and saying some crazy shit that he shouldn't. I can cuss, I'm assuming.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not me just being an asshole to comedians. No. You ask a comedian, they'll be like, oh, yeah, he's completely 100% right. They're broken people.
Yeah.
There's something that happened in their past. Either their daddy touched them, or mom passed away from a significant disease when they were young, or they got picked on and bullied when they were in high school very heavily, or they're broken people. Like, a relationship with an abortion. Like, and when I say they're broken people, like, you watch the kind of deaths that happen in the world of comedy, you go, holy crap, that's how they died? It's like, yeah, Chris Farley was doing lines of blow off of hooker's asses, shot up with heroin, and then, like, face planted through a table in a high rise in Chicago at 3:00 in the afternoon on a freaking Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you're like, on a Tuesday at 3:00 in the afternoon, he's like, oh yeah, dude. And that was the end of the bender. That started on Friday.
Yeah.
And you're just like, holy crap, like, this is nuts. They're very broken people. They're not bad human beings. Don't get me wrong. I have tons of friends that are comedians that are successful, like Dan Walsh, who was the co-host of my show. Very soon, getting ready to move to L.A., you know. One of his good friends, Amy Paffraff. Like, there's really well-known comedians. You know, I know guys in St. Louis like Matt Conte and Jeremy Esig. And, you know, I know a lot of these guys, Kenny Kynes and those guys, even H.D. Reeves. I know a lot of these people. But you talk to them and they'll tell you. Yeah, there's a lot of broken motherfuckers on the comedy scene.
Right.
Artists are in a similar vein, tortured souls. They're tortured souls. Like, to really dig deep the way a good songwriter writes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They have to have experienced some serious pain. Like, they have no choice but to get it out of their system. I know it's in hip-hop, and I know it might not be necessarily your cup of tea or maybe the listener's cup of tea, but Lil Wayne is famous for, at one point, he had so many books, like notepads of hip hop lyrics that he had been writing for like 10 solid years.
Yeah.
And every time he went into the studio, he would start to rap and do some stuff freestyling wise, and eventually would lead back to something he had already written down. He could actually, off of the top of his head, go, oh, that's the blue notebook from 2013. He'd grab it, or, you know, whatever year, grab the notebook, and he'll point it out to you and be like, see? He ended up having to do like a 2 week to 3 week purge. He went into a studio and all he did was record every lyric that he knew off it. Like, he just read it out of that thing just to lay it out, get it down so that it could literally flush out of his system, because he needed to influctuate himself with new stuff.
Hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're a tortured soul, like, you know what I'm saying? That's where the writing comes in, the way you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, there will be, and it happens to them also.
Sure.
You know, so.
I think there's some songs, like, with a lot of these guys that are writers, like, you know, with like I said, with Will Hogue, like, there's some song, I forget the name, you know, whatever name, but he, you know, about cheating on his wife and all this stuff like that, and then people are like, you know, you really did that or something, you know, and he's like, you know, not all these are true stories, they're just, he's able to tell.
I can tap into it.
Yeah. He can tell a story by, you know, putting himself in that character and stuff like that too, so, but yeah, for the most part, you know, a lot of those, like, a lot of that stuff is, like you said, a tortured soul. There's a lot of that's got to come. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, hopefully someday I'll be able to write that song, whatever it might be.
I think you will. Yeah. I think you'll get there. You know, it just takes time.
Right. Yeah. I just, like I said, big fan. But
do you play music?
No, never. I mean, just like I said, just a fan. I tried, like, sixth grade. I picked up, I went to band and I played the cornet for a couple weeks and I wasn't very good. And my band teacher was like, hey, you can either try really hard or you can go back to gym. And I was like, all right, I'll see you later. So
you can go back to gym. You can get the hell out of here is what I'm trying to explain to you.
Right. So I went and I played basketball and football and stuff through school. So
where'd you go to high school at? That's the famous St. Louis question, right?
Yep. Yeah. I went to Wentzville. So
Holt?
Yeah, I went to. I started at Holt, and then they opened up Timberland as the annex. It was an expansion school, so I was essentially a senior over there for 3 years before they named it, and then they became Timberland, and so it's now they have three high schools in Wentzville. So I was kind of on that, whatever, I can't think of the word. But anyway, whereas I was growing, I was constantly changing. I lived in the same house, but kept changing schools because it kept expanding. So
fair enough.
Yeah, so the area, obviously, you look at Wentzville and O'Fallon, and it's one of the highest growing population in the state over the last 15, 20 years or whatever it is. So area is growing like crazy out here. But yeah.
Yeah, I just moved out this direction.
Yeah.
You know, I was living in Hazelwood for the last few years.
Right.
So there I was, right next to Ferguson, when it popped off, which, you know, it wasn't that bad, you know, for where we were at and stuff like that. You know, it didn't really affect us all that much. And, but we got inundated with quite a bit of like, you know, life. And so over the last couple of years, and we got lucky. We got really lucky because we decided to move out here right around that landfill thing. That popped off, and had that popped off before we moved, you know, that would have been probably a death knell on the house sale.
Yeah.
Because I don't think many people are going to be like, oh, yeah, let me move next to that nuclear waste dump. That's a big – I'm a big fan of, like, dying and having my nose fall off right as I'm doing it and spitting up blood. So I can't wait to spend thousands of dollars on a house to do this.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Right. Yeah. What – so what – who all, like, different radio stations, you mentioned something about Steve in D.C. and stuff that you worked with. Did you work with those guys?
I didn't work directly with Steve in D.C. Per se. I worked at Q106.5 when they were there.
Yeah.
I've known them for many years. Producer Bobby, who's the producer of my radio show, he was their producer for 5 years, you know, moved all over the nation with them as they moved on in the later part of their career. And so, like, we have a relationship with Steve in D.C., and actually, with any luck, soon we might be able to get an appearance for Steve on the show. We've had D.C. on the show before, but Steve lives down in Alabama. He's a radio show host down there, but he might be coming to town sometime soon. We might be able to get Steve on the show and enjoy it, you know, and have a good time. Then I can complete my two-piece of D.C. separately from Steve, and I can put the two together, you know.
I got to talk a while back with Radio Rich Dalton.
Radio Rich is an amazing individual. I really like Rich a lot.
Yeah, it was just an incredible experience to sit and talk to him for.
Oh, the guy is just a fountain of historical stuff when it comes to St. Louis radio as well as the music industry in general.
Right,
like he's just a genius when it comes to, and like, and he ran the HD side. Like when they started pushing HD stations in the St. Louis area real heavily. Rich was kind of like the forerunner for that. He was the one who was over the top of a few for Emmis, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And he was the one really kind of pushing for the HD side of things. So,
yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what all happened with him and KC and K-Hits and things, but he's over on Our Musical Roots now. Roots FM are also, I guess it's, I think they're transitioning between two names. I think it's all just going to be the Roots FM. Here in a little bit or something.
Is it a radio station?
Yeah, it's all internet radio.
Oh, it's internet radio.
Yeah.
So it's not like on your, in your car, like right. it's streaming.
Yeah, you can stream it through the apps. And
okay,
stuff.
Cool.
So essentially, it's perfect for him because you know it's a Pandora kind of thing where you know music streaming all the time, but he'll come in between songs and just chime in with like that was you know. Pink Floyd, which you know, whatever, and he'll give you some fact and tidbit about the songs and stuff like that, and so it's really pretty cool. Like I mean, if you liked listening to Radio Rich on K Hits,
sure.
Things, I mean, it's exactly It's exactly that with no commercials. So
yeah, Rich is a great guy. Like a very he's one of those people like in St. Louis we have John Hewlett, we have Radio Rich Dalton. You know, you've got Favaz. Eric Schmidt, who used to be on The Point, you know, even Jeff and Tom to an extent, like you have these, or Stephen DC, like you have these individuals who achieve some strong success within our market that like all of them bring something different to the table. Mm-hmm. That's what I love more. There was a guy named Les Aarons, Les something like that. It was on The Point. He used to do Sunday nights, new music for like 2 hours every Sunday night. Fantastic. But what my point is that all of them bring something a little different to the table.
Yeah.
All of them have a unique aspect. I get it a lot from people that are like, well, we see your presence online and we see the things you say and what you talk about and how you're brazen and you'll get in anyone's face and you're not unwilling to go down controversial alleys and you're willing to like, you know, really get into, you know, really get at people and stuff like that. And it's like, that's true. 100% true. But I have nothing but the utmost respect for my radio brethren in this town. I don't care if it's someone I don't like. Listen, I'm not a big fan of McGraw-Milhaven by any means whatsoever. I'm not a fan of Charlie Brennan by any means whatsoever. I'm not going to sit there and gloss about that and sit there and try to be like, oh, no, they're good. They're okay. No. I don't technically like them as far as what they present on the radio. And I think that it kind of comes off blowhardy. Aside from that, though, they both have fan bases. I respect that they do what they do, and they do it decently enough to where they garner attention. They get people to listen to them. And I'm not going to take them off of that pedestal. I'm not going to knock them down for that. You know, I respect your ability to be successful in this market, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, just because I don't necessarily think they're my cup of tea.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're not somebody else's cup of tea. And just because somebody's I'm their cup of tea, those guys might not be their cup of tea. So I understand it. And there's, at the end of the Jamie Allman show, when I brought up Allman earlier, I ripped into J.C. Corcoran because J.C., or not J.C. Corcoran, I'm sorry, not J.C. Corcoran, the other guy, the one who does liberal politics and all that stuff. Anyway, I that's how unimportant the individual is to me. But my point is that, like, in that spiel, when I was yelling about him on my show, I basically said, that does not negate the successes in your career and the credibility that you've earned up to this point. Right. And I will not knock you for that. I respect you for everything you've achieved. So don't get me wrong. But I'm going to give you my 2 cents about who I think you are as a person in comparison because of the way you treated me and this, that, and the other. But I have nothing but respect for everybody. And that goes across the board. From people I like to people I don't like. If you make it in St. Louis, man, I'm telling you this right now. If you make it in St. Louis radio, you've probably got somewhat of a fan base and you're probably saying something that's important. It's very rare that the person is just a moron saying absolutely nothing on the radio. It's very rare.
Yeah.
I haven't found many that do it. Don't get me wrong. There's a few people that I'd be like, maybe you shouldn't do radio. That's not necessarily your cup of tea.
Yeah.
But they do it, and they still garner fans, and it's cool. That's fine. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
I've been getting into that more with doing this show. I've had as the show's gained a bigger fan base and
progressed up. Yeah.
I've been getting more emails and people reaching out, like, "Hey, we'd like to get our band on the show," and things like that. And so I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll try. I mean, so it might not be always the fact that I love their music. A lot of the show, early stuff was friends of mine and the people I was a big fan of.
Well, it's a great test for you as a host, too, because like you said, you haven't been doing this all that long. You know, you've only been doing it a little over almost 2 years. Like, well, a year and a half. Let's just say a year and a half solid, okay?
Right.
You've been doing this a year and a half solid, and it's not necessarily what you, like, I went to school for this, and this is what, like, broadcasting is who I am as a person. Right. I am a natural entertainer, and I understand what charisma is. I get it because I got some. I'm not saying that I'm The Rock.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that type of charisma that is just ungodly. You know what I'm saying? But like, I have a little bit of charisma, and I understand how to wield that, and I understand how to talk, and I understand how to formulate this and that and the other like that. I know how difficult it is to be someone coming in fresh, and it's a great test for you because here's another opportunity for you to filter out who you are as a person to these people, work speech-wise and with your broadcasting style for the podcast, and learn. You know what I'm saying? To make a mistake here and learn from it versus, you know. And then also, you just become more conversational. You become better at conversating with people. When Matt, my former co-host of Ramblings with Matt Martin and Absolute Wrestling Radio, Matt's one of these people who bottled up a lot of his things. He didn't like to talk. He didn't like to engage people outside of his social circle very much at all. He started doing the radio show with me, and within about a year and a half, Matt opened up completely. Matt would be willing to walk up to anyone and talk to them about anything at any given time, and it literally changed it. It changed his game with girls. He could mack on girls. Like, he could go and try to get dates with girls better because he had learned to just not worry about what they said back to him, because in most cases, he was opening up about our podcast and our radio show and trying to get a guest on or for whatever like that. If they said no, he was just like, oh, okay, cool. So he just applied the same template to his love life and his personal life, and he would just go try to be friends with people and girls and things like that. And if they said no, he was just like, oh, okay.
Right.
Life moves on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my biggest philosophy about this thing, too, is the fact all they can do is say no. I'm going to throw enough invites out there, and if it works, it works. If not, all they do is say no, and I move on to the next one. I try to trying to get as many people on the show and, you know, various forms and musicians, comedians, whatever it takes. But, yeah, like, I enjoy talking to all sorts of new people. And this show, I think...
Well, I like you, Shane. Yeah. I'd love... Listen, I think you do a great show.
Thanks, man.
You know?
Yeah, I was listening to your show. You also just mentioned The Rock a little bit ago, but you were talking wrestling on one of the last episodes. You guys were talking about like some of your favorite wrestling mad things.
Sure. I got a little bit of a background in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
A little career that I had.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
What,
Well, I came up, I was a professional wrestler. Yeah. You know, I was touring around for NWA and stuff like that. And I started in 96, 97 ish, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And started training. Eventually, South Broadway Athletic Club here in town is where I started. In fact, my last gig as a professional wrestler was just back in May. I got fired from Dynamo Pro Wrestling as the executive director of operations. So I was like the Vince McMahon there.
Okay.
And, I'm just kind of taking my time right now, relaxing off to the side. You know, I might show back up here in the next few months. I don't know.
Yeah.
Never know.
What, when you started, you were, you know, you all the in the ring and everything?
Oh, no, I was a full-fledged wrestler. Like, I trained, me and Orton came up together. So we trained together quite often, wrestling against each other in training and making our moves up as two young kids, just trying to make it in the business of professional wrestling. We both had WWE dreams, you know, and we would go and train at South Broadway Athletic Club and go lift weights together and stuff like that. And that was just kind of our life. And I started before him, actually, like 2 years before him. So by the time he got there, I had already had 2 years under my belt. But, like, you know, that was the dream, man. The dream was to be a WWE world champion.
Sure. What was your, what kind of different names did you go by?
I had nicknames that were crap. That other wrestlers think to this day they're funny to, like, throw at me, which is fine. I get it. Like, I play along with it. Because, yeah, it's part of my nostalgia. It's part of my past. There's nothing I can do about it. They call me Liquid Ice, which is water. That's literally just saying water. Like, it's liquid ice, okay? The liquid form of ice is water. They called me water, okay? But I went by Mark Bland. Then I would have the nickname Liquid Ice. I also had the nickname The Natural. So those were my main things. But it was The Natural, Mark Bland, Liquid Ice, whatever you want to call me. Just stupid fun things.
Right.
So.
Read online the other day that they're doing a 30 and 30 for Ric Flair.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
On ESPN, so that's exciting.
I think a 30 for 30 on Flair would be really cool, actually. Because those 30 for 30s on ESPN, they tend to go in down alleys. Like, don't get me wrong, WWE, when they do their documentaries about different wrestlers, so like, they get in depth too, because that's who they are. But I feel like that there's other aspects that they shy away from. Like, there's, like, if they do a WWE documentary on Hulk Hogan, like they do a 2-hour WWE documentary on Hulk Hogan, they're probably not going to talk too much about the steroid scandal with Vince McMahon back in the late 80s, early 90s. And they're not going to, like, they're not going to, they might bring it up and say that it happened and this was a down period in Hogan's career, and then they will jump to like 1992 when he leaves the company type thing, and they won't really talk about that. ESPN will probably go 15 minutes in on something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that that's the one thing that you they won't talk about in a WWE documentary for Ric Flair would probably be his money problems and his issues with bills and paying them and things like that, and how he, you know, lost a bunch of money and a divorce from his wives and all that stuff, and
right.
the death of his kids. Like, you know, well, they might talk about the death of his son, but like, I'm just saying, for the most part, they're going to shy away from that. ESPN's going to jump all over.
Yeah.
That's just who they are.
I saw some, speaking of money, saw something.
Are you a big wrestling fan yourself?
I mean, I was big in for a while. Like,
you probably hit the second surge in the late 90s, the Monday Night Wars, yeah, the NWO, yeah, the WCW.
I used to watch a lot of Nitro. I never got big into WWF, WWE as much when I was younger. Like I said, I watched a lot of WCW, Nitro. I liked all those, a lot of the guys that were over there, Bill Goldberg, and then when the NWO came in and all that. So I was around a lot of that time. I liked a lot of those characters. But yeah, now, like as an adult, I've been watching, like Chris, who I used to co-host the show with, he hosts WrestleMania at his house every year.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about me and Chris actually, you're talking about Chris Ballmenter.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Chris came with me to the Battleground pay-per-view. We got tickets, oh, yeah. and we went to the Battleground pay-per-view. I met his wife and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So I know he gets into that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He's a huge fan. And then another buddy of ours hosts the Royal Rumble. So those are like, I watch the two pay-per-views. I don't really keep up.
I do love the Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble is probably my favorite pay-per-view. And I think that most true professional wrestling fans love the Royal Rumble because there's this idea that anybody could win it.
Yeah.
Like when they were here in St. Louis a few years ago and Sheamus ended up winning the Royal Rumble, that really blew everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Because the year before, I think it was Del Rio. It came down to Del Rio and the guy with the snake, Santino. Santino Del Rio were the last two in, and everybody was like, oh my God, Santino might actually pull this off. And then Del Rio ended up winning the Royal Rumble. The next year, everybody was kind of like, it came down, if I remember, to Del Rio was one of the last three. So everybody was like, oh, okay, maybe Del Rio's going to get that secondary. And then Sheamus out of nowhere, and we're like, what? Like, blew our minds. But I think what I think everybody loves the most about the Royal Rumble in itself is the surprise returns.
Yeah.
Everybody likes to see the Diesel show up, or you know, the Spinneroony pop out of nowhere just for an opportunity to do it. So
I think one of the last we watched one, and I mean, like maybe 2 years ago, whatever it was, but like, what was I can't think. It went by a couple different names, like, but he was the pimp character.
The Godfather?
The Godfather, yeah. He came out and he got, you know, got kicked out like in a second.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. In and straight out.
But yeah, he, you know, yeah. Anyway, just stuff like that. It's always funny to see who shows up walking down the runway and then gets.
Just to hear the music when the Dudley Boys music hit at this last Royal Rumble, dude. I geeked.
Yeah.
I geeked. Loved it.
Sure.
Absolutely loved it. You know, those are the things that I really appreciate. And as a guy who's worked in the business, a person who's actually taken chair shots to the head, fallen off cages, gone through tables, like, I understand what it takes to be those people. I understand what the work and the time and the effort they put in. And, you know, I was talking about Orton earlier. You know, the proof is in the pudding. Me and that kid were on the right track. He's a 12 or 13 or 14 time world heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
So we knew one of us, like, we were on the track to do it well. I'm not sitting there trying to, like, put myself on the same level. But at that time period, yeah, man, we were going toe-to-toe. We were equally as, like, fast and as good, and, like, we were doing that stuff together. So, like, I ended up blowing out my right knee and breaking my C1 and C2 of my neck, my neck in a certain spot. So, like, that made me damaged goods. That kind of put a kibosh on whatever chances I had at WWE.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not gonna hire somebody whose neck's eventually just gonna get broken again. If they bring you in, they put a bunch of money into you, and you break your neck or hurt yourself, they got to still get their money out on the residuals when it comes to, like, marketing and, like, toys and things like that. There was none of that for a person who's done it before you even get the chance,
right.
You know? So why take the chance on somebody who is just going to walk around with a broken neck potentially and make us lose hundreds of thousands of dollars that we put into marketing if it goes down that road in the first place at all?
Yeah.
So,
talk back to the Royal Rumble. I think they was watching one of them and there was like where he, Reigns won. And I think, like, everybody was wanting, like...
Oh, Batista. That was a couple years ago.
Well, I think this was, like... I think everybody was wanting, like, Daniel Bryan to win or something. And then,
everybody wanted Daniel Bryan to show up.
Yeah.
Because they were playing the corporation, trying to hold Daniel Bryan down since SummerSlam when he won the title and all that other bull crap. And they wanted him to show up. And it was when Batista was getting his big push to wrestle, eventually, Orton at WrestleMania for the main event. And Reigns just happened to get the bump.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Out of nowhere, and it really pissed a lot of people off because Bryan gets the shot to be in the match, and he gets kicked out early.
Right.
And everybody was like,
"Yeah,
what are you talking about?" You know, so...
But yeah, I remember everybody like booing and stuff at the...
Oh yeah, they were not happy with that.
Right.
That was the worst return for a star in Batista, who's not... Everybody gives Batista a lot of crap, but he's not this horrible human being, and... Totally worthy of the position he was put into, but it was kind of, he was fighting against what the fans really wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want to see Batista. That's just not what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Bring him back, let him be a part of a lower card match, but we want to see that. They fixed it eventually, and it worked out really well. So,
yeah. You mentioned Diesel a while back. My dad, when he was younger, used to have real dark hair.
Uh-huh.
He's 6'9".
Right.
He used to work construction, so he had big arms from carrying all this heavy stuff. He rides a Harley, so he used to wear a lot of, like, you know, black and leather and stuff. So he would always get mistaken as...
For Diesel?
For Diesel.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, people always like, are you Diesel? You know, and like... So he would, obviously tell him. But, you know, it was just funny to, like... But he, you know... I put pictures side by side. He does look a lot like Kevin Nash. Even now, like as he's aged.
He's getting older with the salt and pepper and all that.
Gray, so he's still, and they both cut their hair, so he still kind of has that Kevin Nash thing going.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, especially being size, that's the biggest part of it, the fact that you
can... Yeah, that, I mean, that's what blows people's minds, you know. I stopped lifting the weights. I, you know, stayed out of the gym. I've grown a little bit of a gut. I still have my size mass-wise, you know what I'm saying? But I'm a little bit more pudgy than I used to be. So I kind of, but I enjoy that. I don't mind, you know. I put a lot of hard work in for 10 years in the gym. Like, I was putting 3 to 4 hours a time every single day of the week in the gym. And I did this for, like, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Solid. You're going to the gym for 3 to 4 hours every single day of every single week. Taking a break maybe 2 to 3 times a month tops because you have something else that just kind of interferes and you just can't get over to the gym. But if that thing falls out, you'll end up at the gym anyway.
Right.
You do that for that many years, you're going to build a little bit of size, but you're also going to get, you're going to burn yourself out, man.
Yeah.
You're really going to burn yourself out. That's why a lot of pro wrestlers like CM Punk and a lot of those guys, aside from going to the gym here and there, they like to roll around and do MMA and things like that, you know? I think CrossFit has actually worked out really well for a lot of professional wrestlers because you're in the gym so much. And you kind of have to keep and maintain that look and that style and that body just to protect your health.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a lot of jarring shots. You're hitting the mat a lot. You're taking a lot of suplexes and clotheslines and things like that. It takes a toll on the body, man. It's a very rugged sport. It's very difficult at times. And you got to keep your body in shape to handle the impact. You don't do it, you're going to screw yourself up, man. And I didn't even know I broke my neck. That was the funny thing. Like, my knee, I knew I blew my knee out, which is what kind of got me my damaged goods. My neck, I didn't find out about until 2 to 3 years later because I was just so jacked up on stupid stuff that I was doing to try to make it to the next level.
Yeah.
Had no idea.
Huh.
I just thought I had a sore neck. Kept wrestling with it.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, I could have killed myself.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, man, it's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, Shane.
Yeah, yeah. Excuse me.
Maybe
so, check out Mark's show and theqnow.com.
Right.
On iTunes and...
Yeah, if you go to theqnow.com, we've got our iTunes there. We've got links to all the different... You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes. You can download the episodes right there. We've got a Libsyn page, which is kind of who we go through for hosting our stuff and all that. And we do it once a week. I talk about edgy topics. We discuss, we get into about current affairs and current events. So, like, last week's episode in comparison to when we're recording this. You know what I'm saying? Last week's episode, we talked about the girl who had the school resource officer drag her out of the desk.
Yeah.
So we got in on that. You know, when there's a big thing going down, I talk about it. Like, that's kind of who we are. So, and the show is kind of, when people ask me to give my elevator pitch about the Q, this is what I say. You ready? This kind of brings it back around for you, Shane. I say, Howard Stern hosted The Daily Show.
Yeah.
That's the Q. And that's kind of what I want people to think, you know?
Okay.
And I don't think that I'm at the same level as Howard Stern, or that we talk about controversial subjects. We discuss them in a very open-minded fashion. Mm-hmm. We're not disrespectful. We're not assholes. We're not just saying fucking piss and shit and stupid things like that just for the sake of saying it. We talk about controversial stuff, so it kind of goes down certain alleys at times. That's about it. You know?
Yeah, I talk about Stern a lot, and that he's a big inspiration for me doing this. But I don't.
Before we get out of here, let me. You know what? Let's. You're going to be guesting on my show eventually,
right?
Very soon, actually. So what we'll do is, I have a question for you. Okay. We'll save it for my show.
All right.
And then we'll talk about your Howard Stern fandom there and stuff like that. So here's what we want everybody to do: listen to the show, right? And whether you're listening to my show or to Shane's show, right? Find the other show.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to the Q, and you find Shane on that one, we'll talk about this on the Q too. When you find that show, come back and find the Rock Paper show and download it and listen to me and Shane talk for, you know, on the Rock Paper show or vice versa. Once you listen to this, go find the Q because Shane's going to be a guest on the Q and you can listen to some other questions that I have and we can kind of go back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, all right. I guess we'll, that's it, man.
Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it, dude.
Thank you. Yeah, man. It's been cool. So we'll talk to you later, Mark.
Peace out, everyone. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.